Welcome, 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 everybody, to the Her Story Circle podcast. This is Gertrude Mache here in beautiful Wellington, New Zealand. Welcome to the only podcast that is dedicated to bringing you inspirational stories from women from all over the world. Our stories range from business and entrepreneurship, health and wellness, family and relationships, creativity, spirituality, and social justice. All these phenomenal women have one thing in common. We believe that we can change the world one story at a time, one woman at a time, by honoring our stories and our personal experiences, and sharing our successes and failures, and transmuting our trials and tribulations in life into learnings and the stepping stones to our future success. Our vision is to inspire, uplift, empower, collaborate, and impart the knowledge that we have gained through our personal experiences.
My name is Linda Schlesinger Wagner. I'm based in Birmingham, Michigan.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Her Story TV and the Her Story podcast. This is Gertrude Butcher here, based in Wellington, New Zealand, and I am graced with the presence of yet another fascinating lady coming to us all the way from the United States this time. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Tell everybody your full name, where you're based, how old you are, and share your story with us today.
Okay, so my name is Linda Schlesinger Wagner. I'm based in Birmingham, Michigan. I'm 73 years young, and at 62 or 61, I got divorced at the same time that I had an adult son who had a major drug problem. I had been a knitwear designer for high-end stores for years, and I stopped doing it. This whole thing literally brought me to my knees. There were days and moments I was a crying wreck. I didn't think I could get up. As a mom, all I wanted to do was save my son. And you can't save your son. He had to save himself, but I tried to give him the tools to do that. And I was a lost woman. I was really lost in what I wanted to do. So I started volunteering. I had a little bit of money, not a lot. Mm-hmm. And I was fortunate that I got involved with a photographer who had lost her daughter. And she asked me to do a Holocaust project with her. And I was the very fortunate woman that got to travel with her. And I interviewed over 4 years in 10 countries and maybe 11 or 12 states, 441 Holocaust survivors. And she has 4 books now. And a lot of them said they weren't going to talk to us. It was very painful. But when I got with them, every single one told us their story. And I thought I was sad. I wasn't sad. I had to pick myself up, because you hear those kind of stories, the pity party stopped. And I pulled myself up and I said, okay, girlfriend, you're 62. What are you going to do now? You know, I didn't want to do the knitwear business anymore. Right. And I literally got this idea in the middle of the night, starting with one camisole, the pink one behind me, and just doing it in a minimal base. And I didn't want to go to all the stores who had bought my sweaters. I wanted new, fresh stores. I didn't want a mercy order. I wanted people to buy my skinny tees because they loved it. And it was for one size for almost all women, all colors, all sizes, all ages. And it worked. And it really, really worked. And jump forward a little bit, my son got healthier with a series of rehabs and some tough times. The road was heavy. His sister, my daughter, who's 7 years younger, I really credit her with saving my life. literally, at a point that I was so despondent and so sad. I faked it like the best person can fake it, but I was in a hole that I didn't know I could ever crawl out. And then I started Skinny Teas and out of my house and selling out of my house. And I got a lot of accolades from it and a lot of feel goods. And people knew I did this Holocaust project. Yes. And then I got approached to do something in America called Pictures of Hope. And it's another photographer. And she had me come with her and Kodak then. And then Kresge Foundation gave camera to underprivileged and underserviced children of torn families and all different cities. And we'd take them and take the mayor and the chief of police and whomever wanted to do it and tell us one thing that you would like in your life. There's nothing like the honesty of a child, the one who wanted a house for their mom, or just be able to go to college and change their life. And then all these photographs went into greeting cards. And we've done that in quite a few cities. We pay to do it. And my friend, Linda, another Linda who does it, it's another feel good. So Skinny Teas is starting to sell and QVC picks us up and we get a lot of nice orders. And our mission is give it back. So every year for breast cancer awareness, we don't give to a charitable organization. We find a woman somewhere, anywhere. Anybody tells us about one woman who needs help. She doesn't have to tell us what the money's for. Not our business. We raise money for her based on a sale we have here. And honestly, we triple it. You know, we cut her a check and give her Skinny Teas and it's yours. Pay your medical bills. Go take your kids to the circus. We don't care. Just do it. So we do that every year. And then I became involved and I'm now co-chair of something called the Woman to Work Program. And we have an event every year. It's like 500 women and it's raising money to take women who are divorced, single, haven't been in the workforce for years and don't know how to use a computer. We raise funds to educate them in these skills. They get interviewed, they get clothes to wear, they all get jobs. And it's near and dear to our heart. You know, that's another thing we do now. We just did a mission for a woman, a local woman in Detroit. She's from Mexico. She's divorced with six kids and one of the children, the 17-year-old, has a horrible terminal cancer. And they weren't having much of a Christmas. And someone told me about it. And this group, my team and I mean, we must have bought 140 gifts and went and bought her groceries and went to her house. And it's during COVID. So we said, you can't come out. We're putting them all on the porch. The kids weren't home. And bless that woman. Now, she didn't know me. She saw us through the window and she came out the side door and she said, do you like eggnog? Well, of course, I'm going to say that. So, you know, the paybacks are great. She made eggnog. We're friends with her. These people in our lives here at Skinny Teas, it's not a one and done. We stay in their lives. We always find out what's going on. Women are women that are on remission. One's not doing well, but it's not a one and done thing. We keep doing it. 2 years ago, we connected with, of all things, the El Paso, Texas Police Department on a home for women that are divorced or single and need a little help. And we made them a Christmas like they never had. And we all help buy the gifts too. We all go on all the different sites, Skinny Teas pays for it, but they all wrap them and make them nice. And that little three-year-old, she doesn't have enough as the other ones. We have to go buy her more because they count presents. So we're always doing things like that. And so our mission is we are always raising money, or people don't even know necessarily. We do our business and we hope that we're profitable. Last year was hard, but we're picking it up again. Yes. And we're always doing another thing. This week it's mentoring a woman who just is going to lose her business, she thinks. Her and her husband on an impoverished area on the east side of Detroit have a party store. and they don't know how to make it go. And when they could reopen, everything was expired and they didn't know where they were going to get the money. And then a sinkhole happened on the street, you know, it sunk in 14 feet. So a reporter did a story on her Sunday and I read it. Of course, I go and I write the reporter. I never thought I'd hear back from him. I said, well, this is our community. And these are people of the world. We have to all help each other. We have to. So he gave me her number. I talked to her yesterday. I'm going to try and mentor her. I said, did you get the government PPP? She goes, no, I thought I couldn't. I said, girlfriend, we're applying for it next week. We started a GoFundMe and raising money for her. And we're going to help her because isn't that what it's all about? Isn't that what it's all about?
Incredible. And
it's one after another after another. We do animals too. We don't care. We help anything that breathes.
Tell me something. There is a rhythm and a pattern to your life. Mm-hmm. Why is giving so important for the future of humanity?
You know, we all want to leave it a better place. And I think it's not such a great place right now. Mm-hmm. I think people in my whole life, I think from the way I was raised, like we were taught to respect all people, mm-hmm. all colors, all religions. And I was taught that. At a young age, I made a Christmas wreath for a hospital when I was like 10 years old with a girlfriend. Where did that come from? I don't know. My parents were very giving and very charitable. You know, when they die, you find out everything they did that you didn't know. And it's all, you know, my husband says to me, you're the nicest person. I said, oh, no, Paul, I'm not. He crossed me. I can be nice. But how much do we need? How much do we need? And I'm fortunate that I went on a blind date 9 years ago last night, right after I signed my first QVC airing, my contract. And I met this wonderful man who was older than me. And I said, look, I don't drink. I sometimes swear like a factory worker in this place. And I'm never getting married again. I'm on my own. I'm going to make it work. I don't want anybody's money. We got married a year and a half later.
Oh, man, that is such a beautiful story.
He's special. He is. So special. So we keep doing it. And if anybody knows anything, just tell us because we're always, always
looking for projects.
Always, always doing projects. Doesn't have to be the biggest. It doesn't have to be the smallest. Someone who needs help or doesn't know where to go to get help. I've gone through at my age, a few business. Goldman Sachs does a thing called 10,000 small businesses in the United States, which I heard is going to go international. So I was at one time the oldest woman who went through that. And I honestly didn't think they'd take me because what? And now I just did another program called the Edward Lowe Foundation. They're all free. And if you put into it, you reap such benefits and connections. And, you know, it's all networking. And
it's about network.
And right? It is. Being good and kind and caring. And
that's what's important in life.
That's it. You know, let's see, 2 weeks ago for Earth Day, we planted trees. I don't even know where we planted them, but we planted trees. And I'm fortunate both of my adult children. My son is wonderful now. He's a marketing guru. He really is. And my daughter does the graphic work and thinks of all the plots we're going to do and the philanthropic stuff. And they're aligned with me, which is really nice. Once in a while, they say, you know, you have to cool your jets. I go, no, my business, my money. No, don't have to cool it. No, we're doing it.
So let me ask you, if you were to go back, let's imagine that time is an illusion. And your past, your present, your future exist on the same timeline. And you could go back to that younger woman, that younger you, when you went through your divorce and you have hit rock bottom. If you could go back to her and give her three pieces of advice based on what life has taught you up to this point, what would you say to her?
The very first thing I'd tell her is ask for help. So many of us never, ever ask for help, right? Yes, we're strong, we're independent, everything feels perfect. It's not perfect. You ask for help, number one. My second thing is, honestly, I would have gotten divorced. I have a great relationship with him now. Oh, 30 years ago. Should have, but didn't. But I got two wonderful kids. And I think my third thing is align yourself with people who feel like you do. No time in my life for hypocrites, two-faced people. Don't have them. I know them. I'm not friends with them. Align yourself with people who think like you do, right? Mm-hmm. And the world is magic, right?
It is.
The world is magic if you do that. It really is. And it can be. And if we work together, it is. And that's what we have to do, especially now.
I love your energy, Linda. You are just absolutely salt of the earth. Aww. My last question for you is this. Now we're going to take you into your future. I think you're probably going to live to 130 with technology and medicine.
I hope.
And you are sitting in your rocking chair, reflecting back on the life that you lived. What would you say to that older you based on how you're living your life right now?
Well, that older you isn't going to be sitting in a rocking chair because I'm working as long as I can. You know, they say here, when are you going to retire? Retire? I'll be still working when all of you are retired. You know, I think I would look back on my life and I'd say, you did it, girl. You did it. You believed in yourself finally.
Yes.
When you finally believed in yourself, you did it. Because I always thought I couldn't do it. And I did do it. And I did it on my own. And I didn't want to borrow money. And I was lucky. And everything just aligned in order. But it was magic. I look at my life.
You created your luck. And we all do. We have a little something and the universe meets us halfway. There's no point in staying at home, moaning, complaining about your life. Do a little something. The universe will catch you.
That is so true.
Thank you so much for this amazing interview. And wow, thank you everybody for tuning in. Skinny Teas is going global. The Her Story Circle is going to deliver this product to as many, many countries as possible. And Linda is going to be invited to speak at our online summit. So we will take her around the world to the different countries and share her story as well. So if you haven't registered to either come and speak, our next summit is the 14th of May to the 24th. Go onto our website, theherstorycircle.com. And then you might have time to do a workshop with Linda because most of our speakers run one-hour workshop where they impart their business knowledge and skills to other women so we can transfer our knowledge and empower each other with practical how-tos to get you from point A to where you want to go. So, Linda, thank you so much. Don't go away. But goodbye, everybody. I'll be back again tomorrow with yet another fascinating lady. Have a fantastic day wherever you are in the world. Bye for now.
If you would like to support the Her Story Circle so that we can curate more fascinating and intriguing stories around business and entrepreneurship, health and wellness, family and relationships, creativity, social justice, and spirituality, hit the donate button on the herstorycircle.com website, and this will help us reach more women and share these fascinating stories with you every single day. Thank you so much for your support. Thank you for listening in.
I am Iman Bashir. I am 24 years old and based in Toronto, Canada.
Hello, everybody. This is Gertrude Macha here in beautiful Wellington, New Zealand. Welcome back to the Her Story TV, Her Story Podcast, and now the Her Story Magazine. Welcome, welcome, welcome to my amazing guest coming to us all the way from Canada. Please tell us your full name, where you're based, how old you are, and share your story with us today.
Perfect. I am Iman Bashir. I am 24 years old and based in Toronto, Canada.
Where does your story begin?
Story begins basically all the way from when I was 7 or 8 years old on the playground, bartering food for different, I was always an entrepreneur. And when I was 11 years old, I started receiving there was golf balls in our backyard. And I started selling golf balls. And for as long as I could remember, I was just always like a little hustler. And so when I went to university, I went to university in Canada. I noticed that there was a big void that I was feeling, that I could not find enough female mentors or people in leadership that I could really look out to. And I found that it was really hard for me to find girlfriends that were also very studious and that loved to study together. And so I thought, why are there so many different types of male clubs? I'm going to create a woman in leadership organization. Soon I figured out that a lot of women were feeling the same way as me, that they felt like they didn't have any kind of platform where they could connect with like-minded people or mentors. And so we sought out to create a woman in leadership organization. I was only 17 years old creating this, and it became so big. It became one of the largest organizations on campus. Then in my third year, I was poached by someone, this amazing founder that wanted to throw what I was doing at scale. So I was doing conferences with a couple hundred people, and I was like, this is so hard, this is impossible. And all of a sudden I had someone coming to me being like, hey, do you want to do one with 15,000 people? Oh yeah, and Michelle Obama is going to be there, and Whitney Wolf, let's make this happen. And I'm like, okay, I can't turn this down. Dropped out of school. I was in school for sciences, but it never really felt like me. I always felt like I was always like a little hustler. I needed to be a business student. So I switched to my second year, and I did a lot of programming courses, but school was just never really for me. And so I dropped out of school, executed this conference, and in 170 days, we did it. It was a 4-day conference that really put Toronto on the map for Toronto Tech. And now in Toronto, it's like a mini, it's like Toronto International Film Festival. It's like South by Southwest. It's a renowned conference. But my thing was, for me, it didn't feel like enough. I always thought that I felt like I wanted to be a part of something that I owned, that was my baby, and that I was not working for someone else. So I went from there, parted, very great relationship with everyone, but I was like, something's missing. I want to do it on my own. So I met up the founder of Audiobooks was like, do you want to join a video facial recognition company? Let's make this happen. It was definitely a twist from what I was doing, but I was like, I'm young. I'm going to work as hard as I can. And then after 8 months, it started turning into not a technology company. It was turning into a restaurant to execute a concept. And so I sold my shares. And then I'm like, what now? I left school for no reason. I did not know what to do. Leaving school, my whole family was like not approving of it. I had these moments of everything I kept trying to do kept failing. I tried a transcription company where people transcribe voice to text. That wasn't working. It wasn't scalable. I tried a bunch of different things. And for me, I even tried there was a couple people at the very beginning that's always believed in me. And even with them, I tried executing stuff, but I just couldn't really get my grasp on it. And I always felt like I was working for another powerful man, or like giving up some of my equity or partnership. I always thought that the only way I could become successful is if I had a man or something that's pulling me there, or someone handing me a silver platter. Mm-hmm. And I had this moment where everything changed when I realized that if I keep relying on other people, if I keep relying on or thinking that I need a man or thinking that I need this to achieve what I want to achieve, I'm never going to get anywhere. And I have had in all those failures, I think that there was like 10 different business ideas that I invested in myself. I was like, I put my own money, worked super hard. And there was different times. Like one time my code got stolen. One time someone took all my work and in the end said, oh, I'll give you 1%, and was making insane amount of money off of me just because I was younger. And then I thought, okay, what can I do so that I am irreplaceable and so that I have the cards in my hand? And I took time off and I went and learned how to code. I taught myself, did one of those little boot camps. And ever since then, it was that moment in my life which changed, where I'm like, I could build whatever I want. I can do whatever I want. And the one thing that has been stopping me this whole time is myself. And the one thing that has been stopping me is that blocker, that thing that I built in my head that there always needs to be someone else. Mm-hmm. And from there, I was doing websites freelance just to pay for my living, and developed a skill set of design and was outsourcing to India, and learning myself was irreplaceable because I realized people kept telling me, you're doing websites, you're doing okay. Like, why do you need to learn how to make the website when you could pay someone $5 an hour? And I didn't understand it till I learned it. And now I'm like, someone, a proper CEO, knows how to do the janitor's job. And the job knows all the pieces. And I think it's important for appreciation and working with others. And I scaled, I was doing websites and I started doing more and more and more. And I realized that, like, every time I would go in, now at this point, my websites were getting good. And from the prior experiences, I was so scared to like be in the Toronto tech scene. I was so scared to go out because I'm like, I'm doing it myself. This may not be good enough. And so I would price people $1,000 to $2,000 per website. And then one day people would always be like, okay, great. And I was working so hard. Then one day someone told me, they're like, whatever you think you're valued at, times it by 5, because you are what you set your value. And by you telling someone your price is that, they're going to value you at that when you're doing phenomenal websites. From that day going forward, I moved all my prices to minimum of 10K, minimum. And I got a lot of no's and I felt like, oh my God, what am I doing? Like, why am I doing this? And then ever since then, it just brought a whole different, I started appreciating my work and put value on my work. And from then I learned how to code through these websites, and I have been proud. And I always thought like money was a great, so I'm successful when I get my Tesla. I'm successful when I get a $7,000 per month apartment and my Prada bag. And every single time I saved up money and I started scaling this company, I got a client for $30,000 a month just for me. And I started scaling this. And I remember at the beginning, I thought, again, I made the same mistake. I thought that I have to involve a guy just to go to meetings, just so that people can take me seriously. I would literally hire someone to come in the room with me and then would give people half the partnership for no reason. And that's when I realized, no, I am worth this. And I just did it. I just woke up one day and said, I'm worth this. And now I have real skill sets. I have things to back it. And ever since then, I have seen, I'm actually proud of my work. For me now, it's not about other people. And since then, I've gotten the ability to actually work on enterprise clients. I am now building my own machine learning artificial intelligence copy generator. And still to this day, everyone's like, artificial intelligence? You don't look like you know how to code. But I now use that as my strength. And I'm like, damn right. And I have hired, now we're at 7 people and I am self-funding. I'm not taking any funding from anyone else, just because if someone wants to be a part of it, I want it to be a strategic partnership. I don't want to just give parts that ownership. just because I think that I have to. And I'm using all these different streams of revenue to pay for my passion and allow me and the team and create an environment where everyone is so happy. Like one of the girls working with us, she's like, I've always wanted to do a film festival. It has nothing to do with artificial intelligence. And I'm like, well, do you know what? 20% of our profits I want to put towards a venture fund where we can execute on our grandiose, crazy ideas. You want a bubble soccer tournament? Let's go do it. Figure out a way to integrate charity so it makes sense. Let's focus on being better people and not just about the money. And since then, everyone's asking me, everyone I most commonly hear, like, where did you go to school? How did you learn how to code? How did you get involved with this? Like, how are you traveling so much and don't have to be in an office? And it's one thing I wish I could just tell the younger version of myself, just so I could skip the 4 or 5 years of just running in circles, is that okay, you are. Okay. I think you are.
I love that you've got there, because I was just about to ask you, number one, how old are you now? Because you started so young. And number two, if you were to have a conversation with the younger you, when you were starting out without confidence, what 3 nuggets of wisdom would you tell her? So tell us your age now and then answer the second one.
So my age is 24. I started all this when I was 17. What would I tell myself? 3 things. So number one is that you're as successful as your team. You don't have to. When I was in school doing these startups, I always wanted to be on top, and so did the other girls. And it was, girls can be me.
That's right. So,
yeah. And I am embarrassed of how I acted, and I'm sure they are too. And now we come together and we're like, why did we fight about presidency or this or that or this club? You get farther when you're together, that no one has to be put down to be put up. And that's one of the biggest things. Number two is value yourself. You are not, whatever you think you are worth, times it by 3, because someone will see it. And don't ever settle for less just because you think society or someone else has set that on you. And then number 3 would be say no more often. I think I even struggle with it now. I'm way too nice. It's not being way too nice. It's just put yourself first sometimes. I know you want to make everyone else happy, but sometimes you need to put yourself first.
Love that. I absolutely love it. Now, I'm very, very curious to find out about your copywriting AI software. As you know, we are an online magazine, always trying to find ways to write faster. And how does it work? Tell us a little bit about the project that you're working on now, right?
Yes. So search engine optimization is how to get to the top of Google. That's what, yes, I was doing for this 30K a month client. And majority of it was backlinks, people linking to you, building out your blog. That's the name of the game. But if you build something, you still need something to lead people there. And it's all about keywording and doing research and figuring out topics, figuring out what people are searching. So I'm like, how can we automate what I'm doing at scale? And this costs someone $30,000 a month. How can I make it affordable so that a young blog can compete with Amazon's blog or Walmart's blog? So I search, there's this new technology, which we got early access to. Elon Musk created it. And it's basically 107 billion parameters. It's memorized the full internet. And what you do is you just type in, hey, I want to write an article about this. It finds you the best headlines. It finds you the best topics. You type in one sentence and it will give you an introduction, middle, and now you as a business, people as a business, don't have to go and pay a full-time copywriter. And everyone often asks me, how's the quality good? You could tell if something's written by a bot. You cannot tell if something's written by a bot. Basically, everyone says, how does the bot know love? How does the bot know emotion? The bot has read every single book, website, everything on love. It can form its own opinions. And we add tone. And the best part is I've been working on this for 3 months. We're actually launching in 2 days. So I'm super excited. But it's gotten to the point where you type it in, it actually learns you. It learns your writing style. It learns what you are loving, and it's able to pump out this content.
That is just absolutely incredible. I am just so excited to sink my teeth in it as well. So is it open to the world right now? Where are you at if someone like me wanted to get access to it?
So I'm actually going and putting the website live in 3 hours.
Are you serious? This is cutting edge. It's happening as we speak.
It's exciting. And I know it's Sunday night and I'm still at the office. When people say that, like, they just think success comes easy. Nope. I think I'm just starting and I'm putting in 17, 18 hour days. Just for this, but it launches in 2 days where everyone can sign up on craftly.ai. Craftly is in like crafting content.
Right.
And they take it for a swing themselves. And the best thing is it doesn't replace creativity or it enhances.
It really makes it easier.
Like a brainstorming buddy.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So my last question for you is this. If you're going to have a conversation, let's say that time is an illusion and your past, your present, and your future exist in the same timeline, and you can have a conversation with the future you.
Mm-hmm.
At the age of 100 and you're sitting in your rocking chair reflecting back on your life, what would you say to her based on how you're living your life right now?
It's a good one. I've always thought of like the past me. I've never talked about the future me. I would say achieving my goals and my dreams, it's not if, it's how and when. For me, I have this such determination that no matter what, I want to get there. And I would say that one of the biggest things I would tell the 100-year-old me is just remember your struggles as a woman going through it, the 10 failed companies, the times when men literally like walking in a room and someone had told me your smile with a smile like that, you're never getting anywhere as like a 17-year-old girl for an internship. And my biggest thing would be that when you get to where you want to be, always remember how you got there, just because I think right now women compete way too much. Like it's so hard to become who you are. Mm-hmm. And so because women have to like try so much harder, they almost gatekeep their position and gatekeep. And I found that like the woman mentors that I reached out to that had woman organizations did not give me time of the day before. Now they do, but they did not. And
initially, they didn't see your potential.
I think it's more so that they just didn't, they thought the limelight would shine less on them or that they like being the only girl in the room because it gives them an edge.
Okay.
And so my biggest thing is don't ever forget where you came from or the struggle or the younger you, and try, make it your life's purpose to try to help people go through what you went through or learn the same lessons that you learned.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. My last question for you is this. Have I left any question out that I should have asked you?
No, you got me thinking.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for coming online and gracing us with your presence. And thank you to everybody who tuned in this morning. I told you we have some fascinating women who are going to be featured in the Her Story magazine. This is going to be a fascinating story. I will put all of the links so you get access to this amazing software. Come back again tomorrow when I interview yet another amazing young lady coming to us from a different part of the world. This is Gertrude Mache with the Her Story Circle. Have a fantastic day wherever you are in the world. And thank you so much. Her Story Circle is a social impact project focused primarily on women and children around the globe.
We raise money by curating all of these amazing stories into a series of books, an anthology series where we publish 10 stories in every volume. So you can support us by buying the books. You can support us by donating towards this podcast. You can support us by sponsoring some of the social impact projects that we have highlighted on our website. The link to all our projects is theherstorycircle.com/projects. Our projects range from business initiatives where we set up women's cooperatives and help women get out of poverty. We help people who are helping in their communities. It could be that woman who started a soup kitchen and is helping feed the homeless because of the COVID pandemic. We support women who are focused around the elderly, the homeless, and the disabled. So feel free to go onto the herstorycircle.com website, go into our project section, and see what could inspire you to be part of our circle. Thank you so much. Looking forward to connecting with you.
My name is Kathy Jan Hagler, and I am 74 years old.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Her Story TV and the Her Story podcast. This is Gertrude Macha here in beautiful Wellington, New Zealand, and I am graced with the presence of one of the most graceful women I have ever met. Welcome, welcome, welcome to our tribe. Please tell everybody your full name, where you're based, how old you are, and share your story with us today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me. My name is Kathy Jan Hagler, and I am 74 years old and growing. I am based in Hendersonville, North Carolina, in the U.S. I'll just start out my story by saying that I'm very humbled and I'm very grateful to have had my own business for 40 years. It's a woman-owned business, and I'm very happy that I've been able to run it for 40 years. I'm a consultant, organizational consultant, and I've worked with all kinds of companies, oil companies, tech companies, museums, ballets, homeless shelters, all over the place, all nonprofits. And as I was running my business, it was 2:30 in the morning, about 6 days after September 11th, which was a really big day in the United States. And someone knocked at my door. 2:30 in the morning is kind of a hard time for somebody to knock at your door. So I go to the door, and it's a naval officer. And my life changed at that moment. He said, "Kathy, I'm very sorry to tell you that your son is dead. He was killed tonight in a car wreck in Norfolk, Virginia, on Navy base as they were just about to sail out. You don't know what you'll do." He was 19. And it was not that long afterwards that my husband also died. He couldn't deal with the stress, the news of our son's death and his stress. I'm positive caused cancer, and I do believe that cancer is stress related. So when it was discovered, he had stage 4 kidney cancer, and then shortly thereafter, I developed cancer and developed breast cancer. And a year after that, they detected cranial metastasis in my brain. And basically, I decided that I wasn't going to let that happen. And I was going to rise above that. And I was going to try to be healed. And a really, really important thing happened to me. I saw a Kintsugi vase online. And a kintsugi vase is one of those beautiful Japanese vases that's been broken and put back together with golden pieces, golden joinery. And when I saw this kintsugi vase, I thought, that's how you heal. What you do is you get a vision that you're broken, but that you can be unique and you can be different. And so from that kintsugi vase, I realized that even though I was broken, and even though my heart was broken and my soul was broken, I also knew that organizations were broken because I'd seen them for 40 years. And this vase was beautiful. It was filled in what they call golden joinery. And so what I said is, you know, if it can be broken and put back together, then I can be put back together and I can do that. And I can help organizations and other people put themselves back together and heal.
Wow. What an amazing story and a very interesting perspective that you took on where you were and where you wanted to go. A lot of times when we are faced with these major life changes, the trauma that we go through, and you feel like you're just completely fragmented, you know, I went through a separation after 27 years, a divorce. I ended up with congestive heart failure. A lot of our illnesses are manifestations of the emotional trauma that we go through, correct?
Yes. Our subconscious, and this is what I try to work with people and companies about, our subconscious, which is the trauma and the fear in us, is really 95% of the way we respond to things. Our conscious mind is 5%. And unless we really allow that fear to come up, and unless we talk with people, and unless we share with people, and unless we become open and let that fear out, it will kill us. It will kill us with heart failure. It'll kill us with cancer. But it'll be something that really does something to destroy us.
So it's really important to get it out of your system, whether it means you go and work with a therapist, you talk to another family member. The holding in of that stress is what manifests in these so-called diseases, correct?
Oh, Gertrude, you couldn't say it better. You know, I think there's really four things. Is the first thing that happens is you get a thought in yourself, like your mother passed away or my son was killed. You get that thought, it's in your subconscious, and then it changes into this feeling of heaviness on your heart. And once it's this heaviness in your heart and in your soul, what happens is you have an opportunity right then to choose. And that choice is you can go talk to somebody and you can say, Gertrude, I want to tell you that this is really, really hard. I want to talk to you about this and ask for some support. And once you say those words, it comes into your consciousness. And what happens is what it allows you to do, it allows you to then verbalize it. And once you verbalize it and you bring it out of that fearful place, then what you're able to do is you're able to work it through. But you can't work it through if you leave it down in your subconscious. Mm-hmm. It'll make you sick.
So your fight with cancer and you coming out on the other side of the C word, again, is another illustration of that. A lot of times when people are given the diagnosis, the first place they go to is fear. And once that sinks in, the people who come back from cancer and survive and those who don't is, again, a matter of your mindset, correct?
Oh, it's mindset. You can get stuck there. Once they said to me, you have cancer, I mean, that's the big C.
Yes.
That's the big C. Yeah. And the minute they said that, I mean, it's like, the fear is that tomorrow is it. I mean, because that's how we feel. You know, it's tomorrow is it, because I saw my husband go through it and it was awful. So what you have to do is you have to say, okay, that's my fears inside myself. Those are my feelings. Let me talk it out with someone. Mm-hmm. And I always love the saying that if you don't talk it out, you act it out.
Oh, yes.
So what you do is once you feel that, I'll go talk to you. See, I can call you and I can say, oh, my, I just found this out. But then you can work with me to work this through, and I can put a plan together to say, I'm not going to let this destroy my life.
Yes.
And that's what I've done. Wow. And that's what I teach companies.
That is just amazing. So how long ago was it when you had your cancer diagnosis? How many years ago?
2.5 years. I'm still in remission.
Wonderful.
And that so, I see the doctor every 3 months.
Yes.
And I go through a brain scan every 3 months. Okay. But I know that I'm going to be all right.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing mindset. And I love the way that you have transferred that whole experience again into business. Because it is the same thing, right? For most entrepreneurs, most business people, they get stuck.
They get stuck. Mm. And you know what? What I like to think about is there's a law of physics called the law of entropy, which says everything breaks. So if you just know right up front that everything breaks, everything breaks. But then if you think of that Kintsugi vase, and that it can be healed. And what I love about it is a golden joinery. It can be healed with gold and look better than it did before.
The beauty is actually in the imperfections.
It is.
Yeah, that's what makes it so unique.
It is.
That is, you know, wonderful.
When I was a little girl, I had my first cancer was at 6 years old.
Oh, wow. So this is the second time.
It's the second. And I had it on my arm, and I had a big scar on my arm, and I was so embarrassed that I would wear all these sweaters and I would, because I was imperfect, you know?
Yeah.
And then finally somebody said to me, wow, that's like a runner. So you've got like a runner. And I said, so then I started charging people a penny to see it.
You were an entrepreneur at a very early age.
So, you know, what you do, if you're unique,
yes,
it's okay to be broken.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what I've always looked at is I got lots of scars. I counted the other day. I have 39 scars.
Oh, I love it.
That's okay. I'm different. Yeah.
So if you were to go back to the younger you a few years ago when you got the second diagnosis that you have cancer, and you could have a conversation with that woman and give her 3 nuggets of advice, what would you say to her?
3 nuggets of advice. Well, I call the younger me Kathy Jan. That's my middle name because that's what my daddy used to call me when I was in trouble.
Kathy Jan. Okay.
So I'd go back to Kathy Jan and I would say, don't be scared. You know, don't be afraid. You know, changes, everything is going to change. And you are going to break, but you can heal. And you're going to be beautiful when you heal. So first I would tell her that. I would tell her not to be afraid. And then I would tell her to be confident. And I would also tell her that it's a good thing to be alive. It's a good thing to be alive, and it's a good thing to be a woman.
It's a good love that.
You know, my daddy always said, you've got to major in math, Kathy Jan. And I said, well, little girls don't major in math. And he said, but you do. And so I said, okay. And I did. And it's made a huge difference for me. I just realized I was a little girl, but we're good. Little girls are good. I would tell my younger self that little girls are good.
I love that. I absolutely love it. And I can feel your celebration of life and being alive. You know, sometimes we just have to wake up and focus on the things that we are grateful for. The fact that you can look outside and see, the fact that you can drink a glass of water and taste, the fact that you can breathe. You know, we have to start with the small acts of gratitude before we think about the big things when we're faced with these storms. And the other thing that you said that's really important is that the only constant in life is change. Nothing stays the same.
No. And somehow, you know, Gertrude, we're told that we get in our mind that we should think that everything is going to stay the same.
Yeah.
You know, but if I could tell the little Kathy that, it would be, that's good. You know, it's good to grow, having a growth mindset and good to grow and change. And You know, I never thought when I was 6 years old that I would be here at 74, you know, but I'm very fortunate to be alive. I'm very fortunate to be here. And I'm very happy. I'm very happy.
Absolutely wonderful. So let's finish our interview with me taking you into the future for a few minutes. Okay. So if time was an illusion, and at the rate you're going, you're going to live to 120 with science and your attitude. If you could have a conversation with the future you, that amazing woman who hits that age, and you look back at your life, based on how you're living life right now, what would you say to the older you?
Every morning when you get up, look around, be grateful for your gifts, be grateful for the love in your life, be grateful for your friends, and just be grateful and graceful. But more than anything else, I believe that what rules everything for me is be loving and kind to every living thing, because it's, life is really beautiful, whether you're a flea or whether you're a human being. Well, I believe living is beautiful, and I want to be loving and kind to everything until I'm 120.
I love that. I love that. I met a very interesting young man when I lived in New Mexico.
That's where I'm from.
Are you? I lived in Albuquerque.
Do you know where Clovis is?
Yes, I do.
That's where I'm from.
I lived in Knob Hill, lecturing at the University of New Mexico.
I know where that is.
It's one of my most favorite places in the world. It reminded me of Africa. It was the blue sky and that red earth and the sunsets. Oh, you're from New Mexico. What a beautiful coincidence. I have beautiful memories of New Mexico.
I was born there and lived there and spent a lot of time in Albuquerque. I love Albuquerque. There's a song that you should listen to if you can find it. It's called The Lights of Albuquerque.
I will look for that. That's good.
And it didn't get very popular, but when you hear it, because going over that mountain at night.
Yes.
Come down into Albuquerque and you see all those lights. Remember how beautiful that is?
I have very, very fond memories of Albuquerque. It was a very special time in my life. And I was working on a documentary of a young man who was quadriplegic. So he was born with no arms, no legs. He could only move his wheelchair with the back of his head. He was a musician. And I said to him in one of my questions, so what keeps you going? Where do you get this positivity from? And he said to me, Gertrude, life is beautiful if you know where to look. Mm-hmm. It completely changed my whole perspective. You know, looking at his life, you would think he had nothing going for him. And still, despite his disability, despite all of his medical challenges, just one of the most incredible young men I have ever met. So think
of him as a kintsugi vase.
Yes.
So I took a lesson on how to make kintsugi, because I wanted to know what it felt like. I found a kintsugi artist. She taught me how. So I broke the vase. I cleaned the pieces. I filled it in with gold. But what you find is this process of being broken and then coming together and joining together and then being unique. And so this young man was, he's saying, you know, I'm me, I'm unique.
And yes. I'm beautiful. And it's interesting because when I interviewed his mom and his dad, as he was coming down his mother's birth canal, all of his bones broke. This baby was born with fractures. So he had a certain genetic disease in his bones. He was in a cast for the first 6 months of his life. And just the most beautiful human being I've ever met. Amazing musician. And now this little synchronistic connection with you coming from New Mexico. How beautiful is that?
And by the way, I'm a musician.
You are. I'm a pianist. Oh, I love this. What do you play?
The piano.
Oh my gosh.
I started teaching lessons at 12.
Okay.
In Clovis.
Wow.
Because my mother and dad said, you know, you've just got, I'm an only child. My dad, yeah. I was very poor. My dad only went to school through the sixth grade. And he said, you've got to get out of the mud, Kathy Jan, which means you've got to keep going to school.
Yes.
So he wanted me to major in math and mother wanted me to major in piano. So I majored in both.
I love your parents. Do you want to finish off our interview and play us something?
Oh, I can't right now. My piano's not working.
No, what a pity.
But you know what? I'll send you a tape of me playing something.
Please do. Please
I will.
Do. That would be awesome.
I would love that. I would love to do that.
Thank you so much, Kathy. This has been an inspiring interview. You know, I never know what I'm going to get. And that's why I don't prepare people for my interviews. I want to be surprised with all of these beautiful stories every day. So
well,
thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Will you ever be coming back to Albuquerque?
I dream so. I want to come back someday and just reminisce. I was actually managing a ranch just outside of Santa Fe. I got so many beautiful opportunities while I was there. I worked with the Navajo women on the reservations. We had a project called Cultivating Coders, and we were teaching Navajo women how to code apps, make websites. I remember New Mexico with such fond memories because I was broken. It was soon after my divorce. Oh. I left New Zealand, traveled for almost 2 years and ended up in Albuquerque. So
well,
very, very fond memories.
If you come back, you have to call me and I'll meet you in Albuquerque.
I will, Kathy. Thank you so much. And thank you to everybody who's tuned in today.
Thank
absolutely magical interview. Come back again tomorrow, everybody. I'll be talking to yet another amazing woman from a different part of the world, probably. But have a fantastic day wherever you are in the world.
Thank you.
Bye for now. Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you.
If you like this podcast and would like to understand a little bit more about what was discussed, then you are in luck. Simply head over to theherstorycircle.com, where we have a fantastic bonus gift waiting for you to download. All we ask is that you leave a raving review. And lastly, help us share this podcast with your friends, your family, and your colleagues through Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, and all your social media platforms. We really appreciate your support and look forward to seeing you again in our next episode. Thank you for listening to this podcast episode of the Her Story Circle. Once again, to get access to all the replays and future episodes, visit theherstorycircle.com and subscribe today.